This was actually a suggested topic from a lot of you. Both Liz Englander and I have been taking calls over the past, I'd say, 6 months, especially from different educators, teachers, substitutes, retired teachers, even parents who would like to talk about lockdowns, really understand what is in place or what's not in place, and also give information if your school district doesn't have what you feel is a safe enough plan or makes you feel comfortable enough with your kids or if you're a teacher in those classrooms. Liz has a wealth of knowledge on this, and she understands these programs, and she has some recommendations that if you were interested in implementing these programs, you could do that. We are going to start with day one today. We are going to do consecutively, as I've been telling you, 3 weeks straight of this. So today is part one. Next Wednesday at 9:30 is part two. The following Wednesday is part three at 9:30. Liz Englander is here this morning, our education consultant. And Liz, thank you so much for tackling this. I know this is not a fun subject. It's sort of the times we're living in today. But we're going to start with, why does it matter? Why does it matter that we have the utmost, I'd say, best plans we could in place with lockdowns, communication between teachers and students, including the parents? Why does this all matter in your professional opinion?
Well, Melissa, starting out as a teacher, administrator for 30 years, and now an ed consultant in over 52 schools, it really matters to me. I follow this whole situation with Sandy Hook from the beginning up until this point, and also many other school systems. You know, I work with a lot of daycare and private schools all over Connecticut, and I was amazed, and I didn't even think about this at the beginning, that so many of these schools, and it's no one's fault, does not have a policy such as this in place. We have fire drills in place, at which we practice with the children all the time for their safety. But very few facilities have a lockdown policy in the early childhood field. I know a lot of educators, which we had discussed the other day in private preschools, do not think it's necessary, but I totally disagree with them.
Mm-hmm,
whatever
too.
Approach you use in a very, very elementary way with them is so important, because we're living in a world today that we have so much mental illness starting from early childhood up, and these situations aren't dealt with in a proper way. And look at what's happening. A six-year-old comes into school with a gun. Another young child is walking around with a loaded gun. It's scary and it's very serious. So we have to prepare our most precious possessions, which are the children, the teachers, the educators, the volunteers, whomever is in a school system, we have to try to protect. Now, I was in a very large school in the New Haven area about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they have a wonderful lockdown policy in effect, and I was part of it because they had an unannounced drill. I was totally impressed. They did not have the infants involved in it, but they had from the toddlers up to the readiness program, which was kindergarten age. Everyone knew exactly what to do. Everything is written down, such as an fire drill and so forth. They practice once a month, unannounced. They developed codes. They developed all kind of lockdown policies, where to hide and where not to hide. And it's very elementary with the young ones. We just have to explain to them that there are some people that come into a school or into our home, and we don't want them there. And we have to try to just work out a program in a very simple way that will not make them upset and will just follow through. And these little ones followed me, followed the teachers, held our hands. Mm-hmm. We went into an area, we crouched down, and we protected ourselves. No talking, no anything. They were fine. You know, it's how you present this and what you do. But it's very important that the schools think about doing this. I think the parents and the volunteers and everyone needs to be involved so they have a comfort. They have to know why we're doing this and what we're going to do about it and how we're going to handle it. They have to develop a code for when this happens. They have to develop another code when the drill is over with, areas in which we're going to protect ourselves, how we're going to protect ourselves, and so forth. You just can't do this without practice. Mm-hmm. You need to be prepared. I know as an adult that I always would protect the child more than myself because their lives are more valuable.
I've noticed that about teachers. No, I've noticed that about a lot of teachers, Liz. A lot of you have that mentality. It's pretty beautiful,
actually.
Well,
I would do that, believe me, because these are our wonderful little lives who are hopefully going to grow up in the right direction. And we need to be secure in ourselves. We can't panic. Mm-hmm. Children notice when an adult panics, and we have to try the best we can, no matter how hard it is, not to let them see we're afraid and we're panicking. But they need to know the rules, and we need to follow them. And this is so important. I can't even begin to tell you how important this is.
Yeah.
And the purpose of this kind of drill is to practice and ensure maximum safety of all our students, staff, volunteers, and visitors where there is an imminent threat approaching the center or at the center. This is so important for everyone to remember.
And it's the biggest reason why Liz and I really talked about it. And while it's not a very comfortable topic for a lot of people, we felt it was very necessary to do a deep dive into this. And, you know, Liz just touched on a couple of different things, like the way that teachers communicate with students. That's going to be something we tackle probably next week. So we're chatting with Liz Englander this morning, our education consultant. It's interesting, Liz, because this month I had Jim Perez, I know you're familiar with him, Crime on the Mind that we do every week here. He's one of the only crime prevention experts in the state of Connecticut. And I asked my bosses, can we bring Jim in? Can we have him come in here, talk to our you know, my colleagues about thinking and understanding what an unthinkable threat looks like and how do we respond? And it was interesting because when he came and he spoke to our office, it was amazing the amount of people who were like, wait a minute, we have no plan in place. We have literally nothing in place. What are we doing here? Do we even know how we respond? Where are the safe rooms? Like, very simple questions he was asking. The room was totally, you could see like a deer in headlights. And so what you're talking about here, I think is very important. I agree with you. And the idea that down to the littlest things should be already in place and ready. This should not be a scramble to the finish when the threat happens. You should already be imagining at the start of every school year that you are no different than any other school across the country, and it's not clear if you will be a target or not. So these are the things you need to have in place. So let's talk about the preparations, okay? Before we do the teachers' dialogue, parents being involved, what should teachers, administrators, what should they have ready and readily available, should I say, in case of an emergency?
You know, Melissa, everyone does things in their classroom in a different manner, but I'm an exceptionally organized person, and I'm neurotic with a lot of things because the safety of the children have always come first in my mind and my school and everything else. So it is very important to have a roll book, attendance book, whatever you want to call it, with the child's name, address, emergency numbers in it, et cetera, available in a place, whether you're going to be in the classroom or somebody else is going to be covering for you that day or whatever. It has to be accessible so you could grab that right away in case you have to do a head count and count the children in the classroom and make everyone aware. You also have to have a sheet or a little index file of all the parents' names, addresses, emergency contacts, and so forth, so you could alert them when the drill is over with or when the episode is over with and keep them in contact and what's going on. You know how they panic. You know what I saw on the TV and everything. God bless us all, what happened at Sandy Hook and all over the country with all over these episodes. Parents panic, and I don't blame them. And the way certain classrooms are set up, teachers are not that organized and do not have these things available. It is so important. You have to look at your classroom and evaluate it properly, too, and say to yourself, well, let me see, where is a safe place, God forbid this should happen, where we could all hide and have protection, mm-hmm. whether it's in a bathroom, whether it's in a closet, whether it's in a kitchen area, whatever. So you could all try to fit together, crouch down, and I would be the first one near the door that I could try to lean over the children as much as possible to protect them. Let them come after me first and save these children. And it's so important, and it's so important that we don't panic and we try to feel comfortable with this and we try to explain it to the children so they're not going to be petrified and they're not going to want to come to school, because these things are going to continue to happen unless we're able to straighten out this mentality in the world we live in today. And we have to be open-minded about it. We can't say that they're just because they're little children, we can't do this, because it could happen in a preschool. It could happen in a daycare center. I know it has in certain areas that I've looked in, worked in now, and so forth. And my eyes light up like a flashlight when I see this, but I am aware of it now, and I'm trying to deal with it the best I can. Look, I'm one of the most emotional people on the face of this earth, and I know that, but I try my best not to let the children see when I'm afraid of something or when something like this would happen, because we have to help them. We have to get through the situation. We have to know we have to lock down doors. We can't leave doors crouched open with a block or something. We have to be careful, because we're living in this world today that anyone could just walk in off the street. Anyone could come in and try to kidnap a child from a classroom, which has happened too. So we have to do a lot of these things. We have to, if the situation does occur, we have to turn off the lights. We have to try to close the blinds to protect ourselves if an intruder is outside. We have to be smart enough and clue in not to go near the windows. Mm-hmm. If we're in an office, we have to crouch down and go under a desk. And in the classroom, again, if there's a bathroom or a kitchen or anything, it's so important that we just have these designated areas all set up with our co-teacher. If you have a paraprofessional, if you have volunteers that come in, we have to come up with a game plan and have everything posted and written down and available and go over and over and over it with them. Mm-hmm. So they will feel more comfortable presenting it to their classroom, and how they handle it and what they're going to say and what they're not going to say. Yeah. And you know what? It also will be a very good idea, too, to bring a police officer in, and they'll coordinate this with you, too, and they will help alleviate a lot of fears, too. There are a lot of them that are trained with young children,
exactly.
And they have wonderful programs in the police department. I know I used to use the Bridgeport and Fairfield police departments mm-hmm. all the time, and they came in and explained the programs to the children. So yeah. This is another wonderful source that we could utilize too to help us in this.
Totally. Go ahead. No, I didn't want to interrupt you.
But everyone has to be on the same wavelengths. Mm-hmm. I know that people who are listening to the program now will say, oh, this lady's crazy. She doesn't know what she's talking about. But you know what? Realistically, if they look at it and see what's going on in our world today, I'm not the crazy one. We have to do this. We have to come up with something, no matter how elementary it is in your school. It doesn't have to be this detailed. But if you don't have something put together, God forbid, just like with a fire drill, you never know when something's going to happen.
Exactly. And you know, Liz, you touched on having police partner with you, and that was one of the things that I found was really interesting in having Jim come into the office when he spoke to us. He was looking at other school tragedies like Columbine, for example, and something that they did post Columbine was they looked at, you know, here's something that they now did in Fairfield. So Jim went to all 27 or 28 schools in all of Fairfield. And they now have done this where something as simple as marking your doors, they have numbers for every single door so that if something happens and you call it into the police department, that school knows to say the threat came in at door 8 and police get there quicker. They can respond quicker. So these are things that I agree with you. I would partner with a police department if your district has not done that already and see if they can come through and put some of these things together as well before you go and put the program in place. But your school also could go through with a police officer what could be done and make it a lot easier as well. Liz, we are going to pause. We're going to pause on here. We're going to continue the conversation, obviously, next week. And just really quickly, could we get your number if people want to call you?
Yes, 203-929-1352 or 203-258-4351. I just want to end by saying to you, I really am not aware that much of what the public schools are doing. My emphasis really is on the early childhood programs, which I have many, but a lot of this could be, you know, reinforced in the public schools and working together as team effort, because my true feeling is we have to do this, because this, we're not over with all this, Melissa. This is going to continue.
I agree. And it's been around for a very long time. So even bringing it in some regard to preschools, daycare centers, early childhood is what Liz is talking about this morning. So I appreciate it, Liz. We'll continue the conversation this time next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Just be safe.
Thank you. You too. Liz Englander here on WICC. We are continuing an in-depth conversation about lockdown procedures at schools, specifically for younger children. This is a very controversial thing. I would say most schools in Connecticut, if not, I'll go out on a limb and say, you know, all schools from like kindergarten, even first grade, all the way up to high school, they've got some kind of plan in place for lockdowns. But you will find, maybe you don't know this, but a lot of nursery schools, preschools, even daycares, have no lockdown plans in place. And you may think, well, they're too young. Sure, maybe. But on the other side of that comment, what would stop someone from going into any building? What stops a threat? One of the things that you could do is just being proactive. So today we talked a lot about why this matters last week. This week we want to talk more about how do we involve families and children in these types of decisions, which is creating lockdowns and figuring out that dialogue for young children, but then also taking a look at what the dialogue looks like for a teacher talking to a 3, a 4, a 5-year-old. So Liz Englander, our education consultant, is back to dive into this again this morning. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Melissa. Hopefully it'll be a safe day today. Anyways, I have been out in the field like crazy this week. Everyone waits until the clock strikes 12 to renew their licenses, and they need my services. So yesterday I was with a school out of the area, and I was amazed with the comment of the owner. And the comment of the owner was they thought it was ridiculous to have a lockdown policy when they have a fire drill policy. And he went on and on and on with all this negativity. And I looked at him and I said, "You got to be kidding me."
So did you say that to him? Because God bless you. Did you say that?
Yes.
Good.
Well, you know, Melissa.
Well, no, I'm making sure you actually said it because I think that's crazy. That
you know,
sounds crazy.
I said to him, "You know how much I love children. You know how many things could happen. You read the newspaper every day. You see all the trauma that's going on. We have to try to find something. You don't have to do, you know, a complete thing like they're doing in the public schools, but you have to have some type of policy in place, because where you are, it could happen any place. You're right on the road and everything else." So my first thing was that when I spoke to you, I thought it was an excellent, excellent suggestion that Lieutenant Perez made to you when you had your meeting with your people at WICC to number each of the classrooms. I think that is a fantastic idea. This way, every classroom has a number on it, and in case an intruder comes in, they are aware, the police and everyone else is aware of what room is being affected. That is extremely important. Then I did my research with one of the licensing specialists in Hartford that I work with consistently at the Division of Licensing, and she told me that there is going to be a sample plan available for the preschools and daycares because they are instilling this in the daycare preschool programs. And one thing that is going to be mandatory right from the beginning is that any school that participates in Care for Kids must utilize this type of program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they explained to me, too, like we had a discussion, how safe it is to have something in place because it can happen and you never know when it's going to happen. So my suggestion is, and I work very closely with them, and I told them what I was doing, and they thought it was fantastic working with you and developing this and just putting thoughts in people's mind. But again, the Care for Kids enrollees are going to have to participate in this. There won't be any choice, but there will be an explanation given by the schools and the daycares because you just don't put this together without an explanation.
Liz Englander feels, and I agree with her, feels that the parents should be involved with this. They should at least know what's going on, good, bad, or indifferent, and they should be involved every step of the way. How does that look, though, Liz? How does that process look for a school introducing this to parents?
Well, if it's done in the appropriate way and everybody is positive about it and tries to be, you know you're going to get a lot of negativity and whatever. What I would do first in my preschool was to sit down and have a meeting with my board or PTO, whatever they have available, and sit down and discuss the topic, the pros and cons, how you want to approach it, what you want to do, have the guidelines from the state in front of you or what I have been talking about, and then take it to the teachers. Have the teachers involved in it. Let the teachers express their positive comments, negative comments, and then set up a meeting with the parents. I think you need to let the parents get involved as much as possible. Express their feelings, express their concerns. You know, as a parent, you're going to have a lot of alarming parents. This is never going to happen in this area. And, you know, on and on and on. And I understand where they're coming from. I understand their insecurities about this. But this is human nature. This is our world today. And we have to do this. And at that point, present an outline to them at the meeting with, you know, sheets available that they could see it face to face, and come up with if there's a lot of negativity about certain ways of handling certain things, discuss it and come up with a decision how you want to proceed with it. But I'm telling you, we have to do this. The mm-hmm. world we live in today, if we don't have this, it's going to be worse and worse, and we're not prepared.
Yeah.
And from there, we could develop some type of an outline of how we're going to do it and, you know, and proceed with it. Practice makes perfect. You have to continue to do this. You have to follow through with your policy and procedure. You have to make the teachers feel comfortable as much as they possibly can and try not to let the children see that they're panicking about it and whatever. And follow through. Have safe place to hide. Have code. You have to develop codes and so forth and follow through on this. If you don't like after the first time you've done it, change things around. But start from the beginning. Include everybody in your decision. If you're uncomfortable about this, call a police officer in because all the towns are aware of this now. The public schools are instilling it in their policies and procedures. Let them help you. Let them guide you along. Work with people mm-hmm. to plan this and make sure it's put together nicely. You have it written down. The parents have copies of it. And when you include the parents most of the time and give them an opportunity to express both positive and negative feelings, it works out much better that way. Don't dictate to them.
Yeah, don't tell them what you're doing without really involving, because it does involve their children. And Liz, the other thing that you really touched on here, which I think will also make parents feel better, is starting, like you said, with the teachers. I think if teachers feel confident with what their dialogue looks like, most of the parents who don't like the idea of a lockdown for their young children is because they feel that their kids are being exposed to something they don't need to be. And the thing I argue is, you're right, but what you just said, Liz, is right on the money. This is what we're living in. And I'd rather know that there are plans in place than let's just hope and pray it doesn't happen to us. I don't want to live in that kind of world. I don't want to do that. And so with my own son, it's interesting because we expose our children as young as baby age to airports. How do you explain metal detectors to an airport? I'll tell you, because Chase has been on a plane almost a dozen times in his lifetime. When he says, "Mom, what is this?" I say, "Well, we're getting on a plane, and these really nice men and women here are just making sure that we didn't pack anything that is going to, you know, make us look like ding-dongs or put people in danger." I said, "You know, you got your PB&Js here in your lunchbox." I go, "What if Dad forgot to take the butter knife out?" And he's like, "Well, that would be silly." I'm like, "Exactly. So they're just making sure we're not bringing something that doesn't belong on the plane. And they're making sure that we're safe and that on our ticket, it matches the person who is walking through with that ticket." Chase has never asked another question again. You don't have to talk about terrorists. No. You know what I'm talking about? You don't have to go from A to Z with them. It's very easy, but we overcomplicate it because we know the reality of what they're doing. But you have to give these kids a chance, and you've got to give these teachers a chance to be as safe as possible. I know it's scary, but that's the world we live in.
And you need to let the teachers feel comfortable with it and absorb it and give them an opportunity. If something's going to be presented that they're not comfortable with, you come up with an alternative. But I'm telling you, I've seen this in action in three big schools I work with, and it's been successful. They have the toddlers involved in it and everyone. And an explanation doesn't have to be given about someone with a gun or anything. You take it step by step.
Nobody's saying that. Teachers have
respected this, and they're following through beautifully. And I think it really needs to be thought about. But, you know, as I said again, and I want to emphasize this, that the daycare centers or any school that accommodates care for kids is not going to have a choice. They're going to have to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's a protection that the state is, you know, implementing. And there's not going to be a discussion about it. It just will have to be followed through. But each school will have a guideline of a plan to follow, and they can incorporate what they want. And the licensing specialist will come out at licensing time to do their inspection and see it. And if they have some, you know, comments or something, or if you have a comment, you could always call the state or somebody like the school's ed consultant, and they will help you follow through with this. But please think about it. And I know how difficult it is, but we have to do this for the welfare of the teachers, parents, volunteers, principals, everyone in the schools, because you never know when this is going to happen today.
Yeah. And, you know, Liz, I know we're going to continue the conversation next week and maybe even the week after. We didn't really get to dive too much into, like, what the dialogue looks like, if you could give a scenario. So we'll pick that up next week, but really quick, because we got to go to traffic and weather. What is your number if people want to call you before next week?
203-929-1352, 203-258-4351. I just want to end on one note. I'm a very cautious person myself, and if I didn't care so much about these schools and whatever, I wouldn't really be pushing this as much as I can. But we have to think what the future is going to bring. And just by looking at the Connecticut Post today and seeing all the things going on in the Westfield Mall and all these malls, we need to think how to protect ourselves and our families.
Yeah, you make a good point. Liz Englander, thank you so much. We'll pick back up with this next week. For the last 2 weeks at 9:30, we have been talking with Liz Englander, who's our education consultant, about the need to have a lockdown protocol in place for kids who have not made it to elementary school yet. So whether you're a daycare worker or you run a facility, if you have a preschool or a nursery school, typically there might not be a lockdown protocol in place. And a lot of the times it's because you feel like these are really, really little kids. It's probably not going to happen in your small little spot that you're in. But what we've learned over the last 2 weeks with Liz is that there should at least be conversation. Teachers should at least know the language, how they can handle a classroom of 12 four-year-olds at one time. There should be some kind of conversation beyond just, well, we lock all our doors and we make people buzz in. There has to be more than just that. So here we are. This is the final part of our three-week series where let's say, and I'm hoping we kind of did, let's say we convinced you that, all right, maybe this is something we should explore for our facility or for our school. What do you do now? And how soon could you put it into place? So Liz Englander is back for our final part of this series, Lockdowns for Kids Under the Age of 5. Good morning, Liz. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I am fine, Melissa. I've done my homework. I have been in touch with the Department of Licensing where I work in Hartford, and there is a sheet that has come out now to prepare for lockdown and emergency plans. And I just want to preface it by saying I had the news on this morning and there was an intruder going into a school in Hamden. We never think it's going to hit this area. You know, we always think it's going to go to an area that there's a lot of problems, but this is happening, and it happened in one of the schools I work with. I'm not going to mention where, but it was very scary. A parent threatened the director and the staff and was going to come in and kill them, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, my gosh.
So now it was very scary. I was there yesterday. I was appalled and just so upset with the whole thing. But now we really don't have a choice because it could happen no matter where you are, no matter what you set these people off. We're, as we, you know, we've discussed it before, we're living in a world right now where people are very angry and can't cope with a lot of day-to-day situations, etc. But there was a sheet that came out from the State Department of Licensing, and it's Emergency Preparedness Plan Requirements. Now, I mentioned last week, but I'm going to reiterate it now. Everyone that participates in care for kids must meet these requirements right away. And I will go through them. And then the other providers, child care centers, group child cares, daycare, whatever it is, we're not going to have a choice right now. This is going to be a requirement on your license. You know, there's reasons for it, as we all know, and we have to go along with it. I don't say it has to be done today or tomorrow, but I am sure there is no date on this right now, and I put in a call, but they're busy, and they'll get back to me when they can.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to have to fulfill it, and I will try to go through the requirements and give everybody an idea of what they're going to have to do. And if they have any questions, they could either call me or they could call their licensing specialist, their education consultant that comes to them, or call the state, and they will be happy to provide all this information for them. But we have no choice at this point. It is going to be mandated. It's a requirement.
So you think even with, you know, the pushback that people will sometimes give, like they're too young to have, this is not necessary to have this in preschools or nursery schools, you think a mandate is coming? It's going to be required?
Oh, definitely.
It's not
going to be like they're doing in the public schools.
And I don't think it needs to be.
No, but you're going to have to put something in place. Mm-hmm. And I want to go over it with them. And if you have questions, please interject, because there's a lot to give them. It's called a written emergency plan, and it should address these are additional things for the care for kids: natural disasters and human caused events, relocation, shelter in place, lockdown specifically, staff training, how to handle this and so forth, communication and reunification with families, continuity of operations, accommodations for infants and toddlers, children specifically with disabilities, children with chronic medical conditions. And then it goes on to say that the provider shall establish written emergency policies, plans, and procedures that include medical emergencies, but not necessarily limited to a personal emergency, accident or illness, designation of a licensed physician or hospital emergency service to be available, transportation to medical services and notification of the parents, fire emergencies, including but not necessarily limited to identification of means, roles, and responsibilities of staff, designated safe location for reconvening and notification of the parents, which is extremely important, weather-related emergencies, including but not necessarily limited to closings, a safe location for children, resources available and notification of the parents, evacuation, including but not necessarily limited to transportation, location of an alternative shelter, community resources, and notification of the parents. The operator shall implement and annually review specific written policies, plans, and procedures, and ensure annual training for all current staff on such policies, plans, and procedures. And then it goes on to say that the emergency policies, plans, and procedures shall also address human-caused events, shelter-in-place, lockdown, practice drills once a month, reunification with families, continuity of operations, accommodations for infants and toddlers, children again with disabilities, and children with chronic medical conditions. It's a lot to digest. It's a lot to put together. As you could see by the one that I was going over with you, which was more detailed for a school, or even it could be for a large center with some of the modifications. But these things are going to be required. Now, if this came with a license to me, all the things that you need for your licensing, this must be going into effect almost immediately because of all the problems.
That's what I was going to ask, Liz, was is this going to go into effect probably, you know, like next month, or are we thinking the next school year, the next academic year, 2023-24?
My work is every time the license has to be renewed, you have to fill out a new big license.
Okay.
And I have a feeling the schools are going to be notified. I haven't been yet, but I know I'm all prepared for it when I go in to do my inspection with them and everything, that this is going to be a requirement that's going to have to be listed as a separate policy in everyone's license. So we really aren't going to have a choice. As you could hear by what I presented to you, you can modify it, but you're going to have to put something in there about lockdown. It's going to be mandatory.
And it sounds like it's obviously going to be mandatory for that younger age bracket that it's been, you know, sort of just up for, hey, whatever the school wants to do, it's going to probably end up being mandatory. So Liz Englander, who is our education consultant, was given documentation essentially saying that a lot of things are going to be mandatory for all schools, and that would include, I would say, lower education. I don't know if you want to call it that, but the preschools, the nursery schools, even daycare centers. And it would include lockdowns. And it would include, I think one of the items that Liz said was human-caused tragedy or human-caused issues, essentially like an intruder coming into your facility. So it sort of changes the dialogue a little bit, Liz, which was, you know, if people are interested. It sounds like this is going to go into effect, whether it's right away, you know, this calendar year, or if it's going to be happening in the next academic year. Let me address then with the last couple of minutes we have the parents who are hearing this and going, wait, what? I don't love this idea. If you could use the next couple of minutes to just sort of give a synopsis on why this doesn't need to be scary, and actually parents would probably feel a lot safer if their children at least had a basic understanding of a lockdown situation. Teachers were on board with each other and knew how to handle this in the event that, God forbid, something were to happen. You know, how do you change the mindset of the nervous parent who hates this idea of their 3-year-old?
Yes. You know, I understand fully. I received a lot of calls from many of the schools that I work with, and the parents trust me and have a lot of faith and confidence in me. And I said to them, look, it's very similar in many ways in the fire drill that we have in the schools. We're preparing our children, God forbid, that something should happen, and the teachers and everyone. It's never going to be a comfort zone, but we have to be prepared for it. And if the school will present it in a positive way, you're not going to fulfill what they're doing in the public school, because that's a much different scenario. But you're going to acquaint everyone with a procedure. God forbid this should happen, and you have to escort these little ones out with the cribs and the toddlers and, you know, what you have to do. I have been in these already in the New Haven area, and they have been so successful. With practice makes perfect. The teachers are not as uptight anymore. They follow through just as it would be a fire drill. They know what to do. We take the children by the hands. There's a secure place to go to. Everybody needs to know where they have to go. This is the main purpose of it, too. You can't start scurrying around and panicking and running around. You have to have a plan. If you don't have a plan in place, the situation's going to be worse. Yes, it is scary. The school will present it in a right way. You're not going to devote your whole policy to lockdown, but you are going to include lockdown now in your emergency plans. It's a must. It's something that we have to accept, and we have to work with it. And I understand that you might be uptight and nervous. It's a terrible situation to be exposed to, but it's life, unfortunately, and it can happen to any one of us. So we need to be, as educators and as parents, open-minded, because you're going to have, no matter what school you go to, what area it's in, there's going to be exposure to this. So we have to just meet the requirements and do the best we can. If you're upset about it, maybe some of the schools aren't aware of it yet. Maybe they didn't get a copy of the new rules and regulations, and this wasn't presented to them by their education consultant. But I'm right on top of everything, and I make sure, you know, I do my homework. And there's websites that you can go to, you know, the schools, to get more information. There's always education learning how to do it. You may want to ask one of the licensing specialists from Hartford to come down and explain the situation to your school in a positive way. But we all have to try to be positive. Unfortunately, Melissa, this is life, and we have to accept it. We really have no choice if you want to expose your child to any avenue of education right now. It's scary. It scares me just as much, but I go in there with a positive attitude, and they know I'm there to help their children, and I love them, and I'm not going to let anything happen to them. And we work together in team effort, and I think it's very important. So if the parents have any concerns or questions, they could either call me, or better still, call their school and speak to the director and whatever. Again, we have no choice in this matter. This is a mandated thing, and especially for children who participate and care for kids, I'm sure that will be reinforced even before the other part, children.
I think so, too. And Liz, if you don't mind sharing your number, just because I would imagine there might be a parent or two who just want to be able to connect with you, how do they contact you?
203-929-1352 or 203-258-4351. It will be worked out. There's going to be ups and downs with the policies, but if you work with the school and work with the director and whatever else, you ask for a meeting, I'm sure they will have a meeting to discuss this, and things will get worked out. Practice is perfect, and if we get through this, we will all be safe and sound, hopefully.
Yeah, that's the goal, right? Liz Englander,
yes.
I want to thank you so much for the research that you've done and for presenting all of this information over the last 3 weeks, and I just want to let folks know that I have saved all of Liz's segments. I will be putting this together in a separate podcast, and it's going to be called Lockdowns for Young Children. So if you want to listen back to any of Liz's advice and all the breakdown of this, it will be up there at 10 o'clock this morning on WICC600.com. Thanks, Liz. I appreciate it.
Love you all. God bless you. Just be safe and sound. That's all I could wish.
Thank you. You too, Liz. Appreciate it. Liz Englander, our education consultant here on WICC.